Hey, I'm Eric Tornberg, and this is another episode of Maker Stories, where we explore what makes the makers, what they care about, what they grapple with, what they want people to say at their funeral, and everything in between. This week, we talk with Kevin and Nguyen, editorial director of Oyster. This episode is all about books. We talk about Kevin's role curating books for Amazon, his thoughts on the future of publishing, what books have influenced him the most, reading highbrow versus lowbrow, and much more. Here's Kevin.
Are you a diehard reader? Have you always been?
Yeah, I would say so, for sure.
And what is your kind of... I've heard you're a phenom. Whatever it is you do, I've heard you're like one of the best at it.
I mean, I just read a lot. I think last year I read 161 books.
So you read like almost 3 books a week?
Yeah.
Or a couple weeks?
And that's just cover to cover. I like put down books that I don't like after about like 100 pages. So.
Really? Are you a Kindle? Do you read online? How do you read?
It's funny. I mostly read digitally on Oyster, of course. But I also still get a lot of books in print. I read a lot of advanced copies, so those still come in print.
Right. And you've chosen your job based on the, like, this allows you to read and choose what's important and get paid for it. Tell us what you do.
Yeah, I mean, there's something extremely gratifying about reading a book, loving it, and then, like, my job is just to tell other people to read it. And,
yeah.
You know, like, really seeing and, you know, working at a place where that opinion, you know, is bigger than just, you know, my circle of friends. So I talk about books, like, as if everyone's my friend, and then hopefully everyone out there will read the book. So
are people reading the right kinds of books?
You know, I try not to be super... this is something I've been working on, because I'm still a little bit of a snob. But I try not to be snobby about what people read. So Grey, which is the follow-up to 50 Shades of Grey, came out last Thursday, and I think in like 4 days it sold 1 million copies. So that might be the fastest-selling book of all time. And a lot of people, like, you know, they roll their eyes at that. I think it's totally fine. You know, I haven't read Grey. I did read the first 50 Shades, and I actually, like... I kind of enjoyed it. Like, I kind of get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there, I think there are books for everyone. And I think, you know, if you think of reading as an act of empathy, like sort of both internally in the book, right? Like if you read a lot of books, like there are like an innumerable number of books about like lonely people. And then you kind of come to learn about like every sort of loneliness just from reading. And I think it's sort of like if you're a book reviewer or you do anything editorial with books, your job is to kind of empathize with readers, right? Like, why do people like 50 Shades of Grey? You know, why do they like, you know, Franzen and like high literary stuff? I think understanding all those things is like the most interesting challenge of being like a book reviewer or a book person.
So let's talk about Franzen. You brought him up. He thinks either people are reading less or if they're reading the same, they're not reading the right things. Is that a fair simplification? Or what does he think?
I think it's a fair description of how he feels. I don't think he's necessarily accurate. I do think too that he's kind of gotten on this, like, everyone keeps asking him about the internet because he gives pretty annoying answers about it. Like, I think Franzen is a brilliant writer and maybe not great with interviews when he's not talking about... He has a tendency to talk outside of what he knows.
Right.
So, you know, like, he has a lot of opinions about Twitter and he's never used it,
right.
You know? And I think what's actually funny, too, is that I can't even tell if he can... I don't even know what he considers, like, high literature or, you know, or highbrow literature. Because sometimes the way he talks about it, like, I'm not even sure if his books fall under that.
Right.
And I love his books. But, you know, there's, like, a level of, like, soap opera drama.
Yeah.
Soap opera drama and all of them, so.
Well, it's interesting because with the internet and just the way the economy works, there becomes this sort of, like, just pure relativism. Like, the crowds just choose what's important.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems becoming more and more that way. And so I'm really sympathetic towards, like, snobs. Or, quote-unquote,
mm-hmm.
like, people who think that there are just more value in certain types of stuff. I don't know where I fall on this, but when I hear friends and like, there's something in it that resonates, and I'm curious if I should be, you know, more like how you claim you're trying to be, and just that whatever people like, and as long as they're reading, you know.
Yeah, I think the funny thing about Franzen is that he's somehow both overrated and underrated.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of overrated in the sense that like he is not the great American author, you know, and I don't think he's ever claimed to be. Maybe he aspires to be. It all kind of started... If I had to pick like a genesis of sort of the Franzen backlash, it's probably right after Freedom came out, and there was this cover story in Time and he was on the cover, and it just said Great American Novelist, you know, and it's nothing, I don't even think he ever said that, so it's just kind of like this, you know, hyperbolic headline that kind of stuck.
And how is he underrated?
I think he's underrated because I think he writes these ambitious, messy novels, and it's really easy to pick them apart scene by scene. But I think, you know, even people who dislike Franzen will agree that, like, his work is, like, just some of the most resonant. Like, I still think about Freedom all the time, and that book came out, like, 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I read, like, it's bad, but I actually have trouble, like, remembering a lot of details about books that came out that I read, like, a month ago.
Right.
You know? And so, like, by the time a book comes out, like, you know, you usually read about, like, 2 or 3 months ahead. By the time it comes out, you're like, oh, what did you think of this book? And I was like, I liked it, and I cannot remember why. I just have this, like, resonant feeling. So I've been trying to take more notes.
But I'm excited for Purity.
I am, too.
Do you know what to do? Do you have info on it?
I have not gotten a copy yet. I'm excited to get one, but I've been asking a lot of people about it, and it's very mixed. I think everyone so far agrees that it's probably not as good as Freedom, but some people are very frustrated. Some people are like it fine. Some people really like it.
Mm-hmm. And
big either way,
right? Are people reading more than ever? Are they reading less than ever? They're just reading different things. Are you optimistic about people in books?
Yes, I think even like I think it's hard to like, it would be hard to argue that people are reading less than ever. Right?
I feel like I want you to be a bit more of a hater for some reason. No, but go for it.
No, I mean, you know, I don't like. We don't know for a fact that people are reading more books than ever. They're definitely buying more. But we don't know if they're reading, but like, you know, people are reading, if not books, like, you know, magazine articles, internet, Facebook, whatever. Like, there's definitely more like reading happening, across like all ages. But I think the question is like, are people reading, and I guess it leads back to your original question, are people reading the right things? And you know, we've watched sort of advances on for, you know, literary fiction fall, sales kind of decline, in some areas of literary fiction, or you know, things that people would consider important or highbrow,
and that upsets you.
It doesn't upset me, but it is cause for concern. And I think that's sort of like the fear within publishing or people who take literature seriously, because I think, you know, you see the barriers to publishing a book are lower than they've ever been historically. And, you know, if you search on like Amazon, there's like so much self-published stuff on there. And you know, like some of it's fine, a lot of it is not. So I think there's just fear that, you know, the attention that used to go to even Franzen is now being dispersed among, you know, self-published authors and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a legitimate fear.
What do you worked at Amazon before Oyster?
I did. I worked on the Best Books of the Month program. So it was a pretty fun job. I basically, like, our team picked just the 10 best books every month. So it was a lot of reading. And
did you feel conflicted at all working at Amazon? Or how do people feel about publishers feel about Amazon? Or
I mean, publishers don't feel great about Amazon. I don't want to dwell too much on it. I had a great experience working at Amazon. I was just more excited about what Oyster was doing. But I don't know, especially toward the end of it, you know, Amazon was feuding with Hachette, and right? Over, you know, just some negotiations, and my girlfriend actually works at Hachette, so she was not unhappy that I left. So.
Right, and so you join Oyster. What is the premise? Why are you so excited about Oyster?
Yeah, I mean, I think originally when I joined last August, you know, Oyster was a subscription service for books. It still is, but it was just primarily that. And I think the opportunity there was, you know, like when I was working at Amazon, I was always reading a month ahead, putting together a list of 10 books every month. And then, you know, like I did that for years. And it was great, but yeah, I got kind of tired of it. And I thought, like, well, wouldn't it be great to, you know, like read some old books? And I think Oyster's like kind of bread and butter is that it doesn't work. It doesn't think about books the way publishers do or even retailers do. I mean, I think Oyster is sort of built on this idea that discovery is very important. And then, to be honest, like a new book to most people isn't necessarily like a book that came out in the past 90 days, right? Like a book that came out in the past decade could be considered new to anyone. So Oyster was really about finding these gems. And I think the model itself was really interesting. And I think the thing that sold me was just the design of Oyster. And I think, Amazon basically invented digital reading in a meaningful way, but they don't really do it with the care that I think should be, you know, applied to books. The Oyster reading experience is, like, absolutely stunning. We have, like, some of the best designers I've ever seen. And I think the importance of it, too, is, you know, like, even more so than something like Netflix. Like, the UI of Netflix is, like, fine, but, like, you know, as soon as you click a movie, Netflix actually disappears, right? You're just watching the movie with Spotify, you start a song, you click away, and when you're reading, you're actually always looking at, like, the reading experience, you know? Like, so if you're reading on your Kindle, you're always looking at Kindle software, and you're engaging with it. With Oyster, you know, like, you're always engaging with Oyster, and that's why it's so important, you know, to design things in a way that's, like, intelligent, thoughtful, and emotional. So.
Right. And how would you classify your big ambition with books? Like, besides just wanting to read and, you know, encourage people to read, what do you really care about? What do you want to see in the books landscape? What do you want to see happen?
I kind of believe that we're actually sort of at this great point where, so I guess we sort of talk about the fear of there being just, like, a little bit more access to getting a book published. But I think, like, the internet, you know, like, you don't have to be of this certain elite to publish a book anymore. And so I think you're seeing, like, a true, like, wide acceptance that diversity in books is important. And, you know, it's, like, diversity in a very broad sense, whether it's, you know, like, gender, race, like, every kind of background, is really, like, starting to be represented nonfiction and fiction. I think these are sort of things that are powerful. And I think it would, like, will eventually, you know, show, like, social good if we all kind of read widely in diverse ways.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's interesting. In music, they talk a lot about how record labels kind of missed the boat on kind of these technological innovations and are now playing catch up. And in 10 years, will they be around? Some people think absolutely yes. Some people think no. Some people think they'll be around in a different form. Mm-hmm. Is publishers kind of the same way? Are they missing out on major technological innovations? Or what's going to, 10 years from now, what's going to, you know, what are the major publishing industry going to look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't think publishers get enough credit for having weathered the storm.
Interesting.
You know, like, as far as, like, a digital transition goes, like, publishers have done pretty well. I mean, like, you know, I think a lot of publishers are feeling a bit of financial pressure, but it's still an industry that's growing year over year. And you look at something like the music industry, and, like, the number of people that work in the music industry is half what it was in the 90s.
Right.
You know, and publishing is still growing. And I think, you know, these are also, like, very big companies, and maybe they don't, you know, move as quickly as startups do. And I think that's the great part about, you know, a lot of technology companies, like, showing interest in books. Like, we innovate in sort of the places that publishers are a little bit too slow to.
Yeah.
But I really think publishers, I think even more so than any other, you know, big companies in creative industries, like, they're really interested in publishing books. Like, they want to be the people who, like, make books. And they're less interested in the platform part of it. They're less interested in, you know, like, really how it gets sold even. And so I think they're, it'll just be really hard to replace publishers.
Yeah.
So I feel like the future is bright for them. So.
That's good. I mean, it's interesting for us as we're getting into this world. You know, I'm a voracious, always been a voracious reader, but not in the publishing industry per se. And
you're just a human.
Yeah, yeah, just a human reader. We, you know, tech, it's all about the best new thing every day. And it's so easy to try something. You know, you try something for 5 minutes. And on to the next thing. With books, obviously, it's, you know, it's a very different investment in time, and people have been making books forever. Like, it's not just about what's new, as you discover in your time at Amazon. Like, there's so many gems out there that have been undiscovered or were just ahead of their time. And so as we seek to create kind of a books discovery platform, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think what's kind of interesting about books is that, like, if you just think about, like literature in the landscape of all, like, creative media, like,
yeah,
it's so mature,
mm-hmm,
right? I play a lot of video games, and I love reading about video games because, like, video games are an entirely new medium, and they're getting so much better by leaps and bounds, like, like every month even,
right.
You know, like you look at games that came out even a year ago and they pale in comparison to like what people are doing creatively now with like books, like, you know, the form of fiction. People have been like iterating on this for, you know, like thousands of years basically.
Right.
So you're seeing like a very, like probably the most mature, form of art that's available. And I think the challenge with that is it's hard to market those things.
Right.
You know, it's hard to really glean from a book cover, like, what it's about, why it's important, and really at the end you're like, why anyone should read it. So
right.
I think that's a challenge. And I think what's really interesting about what the internet has done is that I get a lot of my recommendations just from friends and also like other book reviewers. And, you know, like if I hear about a book enough times on Twitter, you know, like I just have to check it out. And so in a weird way, like it's like by proximity is like the best way to understand books. So
right.
I think like Product Hunt books is going to be great because you're going to see all these great books kind of next to each other.
And what's interesting is that, you know, even if there were no books, like no new books anymore, like there would still be so many books to be discovered and
That's
to be
true.
Talked about and to be read. And as you say, the, you know, the form has matured. What's interesting, it seems that most of the innovations now are in the distribution of the form or the marketing
right.
of the form. And some people have asked, oh, but should the form itself change? Should it respond to what customers want, should it be shorter, should it have music? I don't know, how does it evolve to the different platforms, the phone, in which we, you know, the Kindle, in which we read it? And part of me thinks, no, the form itself is great. Like, you know, don't sacrifice the form. You know, not everything has to be responsive to the consumer's like instant need, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, I don't want to like discourage people from playing around with like kind of new,
yeah.
you know, interactive things. I mean, to be honest, I feel like I haven't seen anyone do it like very well yet.
Yeah.
And I think someone can, and it'll be interesting, but that'll be a different thing. And
yeah.
I think, you know, it's like, it's not like books being published today are boring.
Right.
I think like still some of the best literature is being published today.
Yeah.
You know, so like, even though it's a very mature art form, it's like people are still finding ways within that to do like new and really exciting.
Yeah.
It's crazy whenever I read like a new book and it just like does something I've never thought of before,
yeah.
never come across before. And that, like, it must be so challenging to do that.
Yeah. Was it, and I guess what I point to is, like, Donna Tartt, that just, like, took 10 years to write The Goldfinch.
Right.
Or something like that. Like, that in tech is, like, absurd. Like, 10 years, I'm sure you got some feedback from editors along the way, but you're not, like, putting a minimum viable product out there for the world and then basing it off of what they... That's somewhat comforting to me, the idea that some people still go in holes and just pour their whole minds onto the paper and don't really care what the people think until it's done. It's like purely theirs. That makes
yeah,
sense.
And I think too, probably more so the case with fiction, that authors, like, they really want to build something that lasts, right? Like, I think
yeah.
you don't get, you know, you don't become an author for the money.
Right.
You want to write something, you want to express something that touches a lot of people and that people think about for a long time.
Yeah.
And so in a way, like, even though Franzen's like Freedom is like a hugely flawed and imperfect book, like, the fact that we still think about it
right.
is hugely monumental.
Mm-hmm. Do you write too?
I don't write fiction, no.
Do you write other
stuff? Too daunting. Yeah, I write nonfiction. I mean, I've been doing book reviews forever.
Yeah, of course. But no fiction?
No fiction. Too scary.
Have you tried?
Not since college. I did creative writing in college. And
it's brutal.
It's real brutal. Do you write fiction?
I mean, I've tried.
Right.
It's brutal.
I mean, you can sort of tell why, like, Donna Tartt took 10 years. It's hard to, like, not to be totally in your head about it the entire time.
Yeah, and that delayed gratification. I mean, some of the people I most admire in society are novelists.
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
Yeah, no, I think some of the most, like, incredible people I've met are novelists. They just, you know, they think about the world in a way that you can just sort of see, like, they're always taking it in.
Yeah.
And they're, like, thinking about how they can express it. And I think, you know, I really do believe it's going to sound really cheesy, but I just believe there are certain truths that can be better expressed in fiction.
Yeah. You know, than in nonfiction. I agree.
Yeah.
Who are some of your favorite? So you prefer fiction to nonfiction?
I probably read more fiction, but I read a lot of nonfiction
yeah.
as well.
Who are your favorite novelists?
That's a terrible question.
I know. give like 5 to 10 just some people that you'd recommend. You know, people who want to get into fiction read or
yeah.
want to get into series or the fiction that you like.
I think my favorite book last year was written by Ben Lerner, and he's written only a couple novels, but the one he wrote last year was called 1004. And he just writes he started out as a poet, and, you know, like, it was kind of hard to make a living as a poet. So he wrote this first novel called Leaving the Utopia Station, which was kind of this, like, really funny metafictional story about, like, him slouching around Madrid. And so this new one is about, it still seems like a fictional version of him, just, like, hanging around New York between Hurricane Irene and Hurricane Sandy. It's just, like, it's hugely funny. So Ben Lerner, I think, is one of those people that's, he, in a way, like, I totally admire writers that can do things that are, like, extremely highbrow in a way that's really accessible. He might embody that.
Interesting.
The best.
Who else does that? Franzen tries to do that, right?
Yeah, actually, I think Franzen does it well. I actually don't think he is writing about... He likes to write about, like, big ideas and kind of, like, blow them out. So, in a way, I don't want to take away from what he does, but I think it's accessible, but it's also, like, not doing anything quite as intricate as, like, say, Ben Lerner.
Who else does that?
I think, actually, a lot of authors that do this well are kind of, like, more genre authors who write in kind of a literary bent. I love Megan Abbott. She is kind of a mystery writer. And, like, her novel last year was called The Fever. And it's just basically about these, like... So she just, like, loves writing about girls in high school. And she just, like, has gotten to that mindset about, like, all of, like, the anxieties and the psychic wounds, but also, like, the strength that high school girls have. So this one is about it's this small town where these girls are just getting these random seizures. And, you know, it's about sort of the hysteria of the town. They can't figure out if it's, you know, like, is it a disease? Is it, you know, is it just a coincidence? Is it, like, something mystical? Is it something else? So it's kind of like the pressures on all of the women in this town within kind of this, like, hysterical moment. And the ending, I won't give away, but it's pretty satisfying.
Wow. Who is the... great American author of our time right now?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, it's one of those things you can't determine until it... Like, who is even the great American author of, like, the past generation? I mean, you can argue Salinger, maybe Fitzgerald, I don't know.
I don't know, is Pynchon or Delilah somewhere?
Yeah, there? I guess, like, I mean, they'd be up there. But it's, like... All those authors write, like, such different things.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be increasingly difficult, too, because we, like, the idea of what an American is changing so much.
Interesting.
That I think it'd be hard to define. But I think, like, some of the great authors of this generation, like, you could probably pin them down, like, Kazuo Ishiguro. He's not he's British.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he just writes with sort of, like...
Never Let You Go?
Yeah, Never Let You Go. I mean, that book is... Actually, that's another great example of, like, a literary author doing something kinder. It's, like, that's kind of a little bit grounded in sci-fi.
Yeah.
And his new book is really cool. It's actually almost a similar idea, but kind of embedded in this medieval landscape. Kind of fantastical. It's like super literary Game of Thrones in a way.
Interesting.
I really recommend that book.
Who are some other candidates in your mind, or who are the great authors of this time?
Yeah, I guess Marilynne Robinson. She's great. She writes kind of like it's weirdly refreshing to see a literary author like really like go ham on like Christian themes. I mean, like you actually don't see a lot of like spiritual writing that doesn't. To be frank, like, feel hokey.
Yeah.
I think she does it.
I also love the phrase, go ham on Christian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, I feel like, in a weird way, too, I mean, actually, Donna Tartt would be another one, also. Anthony Dewar is definitely making a splash. But I guess it's, like, it'd be so easy to sort of define who the great, like, musicians are of this generation. Like,
yeah.
I think it's either, like, Taylor Swift or Kanye West, right?
Mm-hmm.
Radiohead, but I think it's less clear with books because there's just so many more books now. And I know there are more bands and artists than there were, but it feels like our attention is driven to fewer artists.
It seems like Foster Wallace has like this legendary cult like.
Yeah, I guess DFW would definitely be a strong candidate. It's strange too because I just feel like you know people point to Infinite Jest, and I feel like. You know, had he lived, I think like his best novels were in him. You know, there was his posthumous novel, The Pale King,
right.
Which is all about the IRS. And the product that actually came out, it was so incomplete.
Yeah.
Things a mess. But I really think that had all the makings to be like maybe one of the best novels
really?
That anyone had ever read. Yeah, it's so it's.
I loved it.
Oh, really?
Even just of the, I knew it was incomplete,
mm-hmm.
but just the whole theme of boredom. I mean,
yeah,
I loved it.
It's like an absolutely captivating book about boredom,
which I think is so in today's world is so important.
Yes,
I mean that's why it's such. Yeah,
I mean, isn't it kind of devastating though? Just knowing that, like, and you like it. It's like it could have been amazing,
yes.
And that's the heartbreaking. Reality of it.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites of him, and I read almost everything.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I also really like. Is it Chabon or Chabon or?
Yeah, I think it's Chabon.
Have you read his stuff?
Yes, not completely. Cavalier and Clay is great.
Yeah.
Mysteries of Pittsburgh. I think there's a case to be said that he's one of the greats, but I find that he kind of does a pretty like narrow thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like always about kind of like. Like masculinity in sort of like a self-conscious way,
mm-hmm.
But he does it well. I like his I like his work. I actually think he does like some even better writing, like just about superheroes. And he had a great essay collection. I think it was Maps and Legends.
Mm-hmm.
That was really great. It's kind of funny. They're like him and I always confuse, like think about him and Jonathan Lethem in the same.
Yeah.
Like Lethem definitely is more of a genre guy, but like his like nonfiction is. Nonfiction is almost better, even though he's better known for like, you know,
mm-hmm.
Fortress of Solitude.
I also really like Zadie Smith.
Oh yeah, Zadie Smith. I can't believe I left her out. Definitely like probably top five best authors of this generation.
Yeah, just a pro. And then where does, I don't know if she counts this, like where does Didion fall into?
I think Didion to me, I actually, to be honest, I have not read a lot of Didion.
Gotcha.
But I think she writes a much narrower thing.
Right.
And yeah, again, like definitely better nonfiction writer.
Very essayist.
Yeah.
And then does George Saunders fall in the purview of who you like?
Yeah,
or
it's kind
song?
Of, his most, it's funny too, because I think his most recent story collection, 10th of December, is like, to me, like far away his best work. I don't want to tell too many people this, but like I think up until that point, I had considered him like a little bit overrated. Like I just did not love Pastoralia, which is the other one people hold up a lot, and his nonfiction in places feels a little bit flimsy. But 10th of September is like probably the best short story collection in the past few years. Like,
what would you say is the book you've read in the last year or two that's impacted you the most, or you've held the most dear?
The one I probably think about the most is the Ben Lerner 1004. That's affected me the most. That's a good question. Station 11, I think about a lot by Emily St. John Mandel. There is like, so it's a dystopian novel, and it kind of jumps back and forth. But there's actually like, and I've like, we've all like read enough dystopian literature at this point. But there's just like this section where she just sort of lists out like all the things that don't exist anymore. Like after the after this flu takes over, and it's really powerful, and it's funny too because it's so many like so many big things and so many like minute things. It really sells kind of the devastation of that apocalypse.
Yeah, and I remember it's like a 2-page chapter.
Yeah, it's short too. Yeah, and like I think about
that all
the time.
Speaking of dystopian for a second, I recently read Eggers.
Which one?
The Circle.
Oh yeah, you know what's funny?
Because he got a lot of shit for it.
He did.
I can see why, but I, as someone in tech, I felt like that's an important book or important topic for tech people to read.
Yeah, he kind of fell into like a lot of the same traps as Franz in talking about that book because he's just like, never use Facebook. I don't know what Google is. He clearly does. I think it's there was someone described the book to me as explaining. Which is really funny, and I think the book is like kind of like flawed in a lot of ways, especially early on. I think it's a cool book, and I think the ending is great. It kind of like, you know, I think the pretense of it, it's like, oh, it's just gonna parody Google and Facebook for a while, and then it's like I think there's like a turn in it. I can't remember exactly what it was, but like then it kind of gets almost like fantastical.
Yeah.
and I think like that turn is really great. You know, it definitely doesn't land in a place that that I thought it would. So I think it is an important book.
Yeah. Do you have any other dystopian stuff that the tech audience should check out?
Yeah, I mean, I think after Station 11, there's a book called California by Eden Lupucki that came out actually last year. And it's kind of like, if Station 11 is sort of the, like, people worrying about art after the apocalypse, California is sort of like worried about like relationships.
Yeah.
I remember actually I interviewed Eden Lupucki and she said this great thing. She's like, I wanted to write a book about marriage. And it's like so many stories about marriage, like what challenges a marriage? And it's always like infidelity, you know? And she's like, I wanted to write a story about a marriage that's actually strong. And I wanted it to, you know, like have challenges that were outside of things like, you know, having kids. And so it's like, oh yeah, they're just, you know, the end of the world. We'll just have that challenge
right.
to marriage. And so it's funny. It's like a very tender novel about relationships, but it's also just couched in like,
yeah.
you know, this forest after like, and it's funny too. I think the apocalypse and that is just like, I think the world just like runs out of like petroleum. Like that's it. And it's like just this slow decline.
That's
and so they've just been dealing with it a lot with it for a while. And I think we're just so used to the notion is like, what if everything was gone like now?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Now you've interviewed tons of authors over the years. What burning questions are you typically looking to ask or to find or to uncover?
I've kind of fallen into this sort of like routine when interviewing authors. I actually really like the first thing I usually ask after like pleasantries is I always ask them to tell me about their book. Like I, you know, usually I've read the book
yep.
and I don't actually need to know about it, but it's so fascinating like hearing authors describe their own work. And it usually falls in one of two camps. Like they either just have like the plot details memorized or just like the thematic elements. And so like that always kind of dictates where the rest of the interview goes. I think people who talk more about like thematic stuff tend to be a little bit more interesting.
Yeah.
But I guess as far as burning questions, I love also asking authors like what, like usually they're on tour or something like that. And I always ask like, so what kind of like weird questions do you get in the Q&As? And they've always got weird stuff. I recently interviewed Celeste Ng. She's a Chinese American author, and she actually wrote this like hugely popular thriller last year called Everything I Never Told You, and it's set in the 50s. And someone, and it's about a Chinese American family. And someone asked her how she researched the racism, and she's like, I didn't really have to research that. It's just like something that like I and like people I know have experienced in my life. So that's always a fun one. And then it's, you know, like, I love always asking people, like, who else they read
yeah.
and, like, how they write and those kind of, actually, no, I don't like asking people how they write. I always think it's going to be a good answer, and it is like, oh, I write at my computer early in the morning before my kids wake up. Don't, that's terrible advice.
Yeah.
Lies, isn't it?
Cool. Well, sweet. Thank you for taking the time.
Yeah.
Where can people find more about you and your work?
Yeah, well, everyone should sign up for Oyster at oysterbooks.com, and I edit the literary magazine we run, the Oyster Review, so that's review.oysterbooks.com.
Awesome. And you've chosen Station 11 as our book pick for the month.
Yes.
So we're going to now go discuss it with some friends. Sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.